the Financial Sense Lifetime Planning Program. Now, here's the Financial Sense News Team.
Hi, everyone. I'm Josh Nunn.
And I'm Aaron Weekman.
And welcome back to another episode of Lifetime Planning. Today, we're actually talking about estate planning, ways to prepare for passing, right, of life and on to the next generation. But estate planning is one of those really important pieces in everyone's financial plan that is crucial to make sure that you do have a plan in place and that you're aware of the consequences if you don't actually have a plan in place. We are not attorneys. We don't write or draft wills and trusts and estate plans. And we're going to talk about that today as well. But point of this episode is to give you some pointers, to give you a brief general overview of why it's important, what things you may want to talk to your attorney about, and some things to consider if you are looking to put an estate plan in place for yourself, for you and your family. So why don't we jump right into it? Aaron, I mean, just kind of starting at the very beginning for those that may not be aware, what is estate planning?
Well, a lot of our work with clients is all about the exciting stuff. It's the building wealth. It's the creating that retirement income. But at some point in time, your time is going to be done and there might be some leftovers. And what do you wind up doing with the leftover money that you have to sit behind, right? The leftover money, the leftover property, things of that sort. So it's got to go somewhere. And you're either going to give it to the people that you love, you're going to give it to the charities that you support, or you give it to the IRS or the state or government in some way, shape, or form, right? So we don't necessarily like the last option. So we're trying to figure out how we wind up getting the most money to the first two options, right? The people and the charities. So I think it's really just a matter of looking at where you are financially right now and just understanding that without an estate plan and putting the proper documents in place, that you kind of lose a little bit of that control over your finances if you leave without that type of planning being done. So while it isn't everyone's favorite topic, and I guess that's probably one of the reasons why we do wind up seeing a lot of feet dragging when it comes to having that part of the financial plan being checked off, it is abundantly important, right? And so when we talk about estate planning, it's really having that plan for the end of life. And of course, mm-hmm. what winds up happening with those assets. So it's important to control your finances both now and when you're not around. And so it's a matter of like, okay, when I'm not around, what happens with my stuff? So let's just hypothetically speak and just say, I've done no planning. If I do no planning, what happens with my stuff then, right? What happens with my assets? What happens with my investments, so on and so forth? So anything that winds up happening, it winds up going through probate. Now, there's probatable assets, there's not probatable assets, but what exactly is probate?
Well, probate is really the state's process of administrating someone's estate, reading of the will, going through ownership of assets, and then deciding, you know, who's getting what. So rather than leaving that up to a document, you're leaving it up to the state or a court to decide.
Yeah, it's the reading of that will, right, whether you have one or not. So if you have a will, then they wind up reading the will. But if you don't have a will, then you wind up going and you wind up getting they go through what they call the intestate succession laws, right? So probate is really that like legal court supervised process of looking through someone's assets of a deceased person, and then they decide to who it goes to. So with or without a will, you probably have stuff going through probate. So they wind up doing that. So like it's all in public so that creditors wind up getting their paid dues. And so let's just talk about a will for a second. So what is a will? You know, so that actually specifies, that's something that you wind up putting in place where you specify who gets your assets and property after you die. And it also names the guardians for your kids and your pets. So you're naming an executor who's going to be the person who's responsible for putting those things in place. And so for a probate court, if you already have that already laid out, then it's going to be less time intensive and less costly for that probate court because, you know, as long as it's official, you know, they wind up reading that, like, you've done this, it's in good order, then it's very easy for them to go ahead and lay that out. But then if you don't have a will, the state actually has one for you. And so, like you said in our pre-meeting, it's one that you may not like. So that winds up being what they call the intestate succession laws. So when you look at those laws, you know, every state is going to have a little bit different laws. And that's just going to be basically, if you don't have a will, we've got one. And so that, you know, California being a community property state, if you have a spouse, you don't have any kids, the spouse is going to inherit the entire estate, right? But if you have a spouse and biological kids, then the spouse winds up inheriting one half of the community property and then one half or one third of the separate property. And then they decide how much of that is, you know, based on how many kids it is that you have. And, you know, whether you like your kids or you don't like your kids, or you have one good kid and one bad kid, you know, so that's not necessarily up to you. That's up to the court. So the children, they get the remainder of that. So probate itself, whether you have a will or you don't have a will, of course, you know, there's a length of time. You know, I've heard some of these probates wind up going, especially if there's not a will in place and it goes through in intestate, that, you know, that might be up to 18 months that like that time period winds up happening. So that's a long time for your family, if they're depending on some of those assets, to actually get that through the courts. Now there's the cost of probate, right? California winds up being one of those highly cost prohibitive states, right? So if you wind up looking at the average cost of a $1.5 million probatable estate, that might cost upwards of $56,000 in probatable fees. And that goes to the executor and it goes to the attorneys.
Right.
So 56 grand just to make sure that the money that you work so hard for winds up going to the people that you love.
On average.
On average.
About 4% of your taxable estate. Yeah.
Right. So it's a good chunk of change, right? So I guess what it winds up getting down to is that if probate winds up being so expensive, how do we wind up avoiding those probatable costs, right? So the one thing winds up being like, what, Josh, what would be like a probatable asset versus a non-probatable asset that you have?
Well, in California, in fact, I think in all 50 states, most states recognize what we call contract law. So anything that falls outside of contract law would be probatable. So examples of things that would fall into a contract, you know, might be your retirement accounts. Those are outside of probate laws, 401ks, in life insurance and annuity type contracts. You know, those are
so things that have a beneficiary on them.
Right. Exactly. So those will be your non-probatable assets. But the things that you do probably want to consider doing some additional planning during life in the estate planning realm would be like the house, for example. That is a great asset that is actually probatable if nothing is done during life or after. Brokerage accounts as well, cars, jewelry, things that you maybe own in your own name. We already mentioned the house, but real estate in general is a good one that you certainly want to make sure you have taken care of. Those would be some prime examples of probatable assets.
Yeah. So I guess it winds up being that big thing, right? Like you're like, who needs a trust? And I think the biggest, when people wind up making that delineation between I just have a will-based plan versus maybe going to a trust-based plan, like there's two things that usually people that kind of like push them over to the edge for getting the trust. It's, do I have property, which is non-probatable, and do I have kids who are minors?
Right.
Because that's kind of, it's like that control situation, right? You want to make sure that the property doesn't go through probate. Now, and then of course, I don't necessarily want my kids inheriting whatever it is that accumulate for wealth by the time they're 18. So I want to have some constraints on that kind of stuff. So let's talk a little bit about what a trust is and how that goes like hand in hand with wills. We do have a trust that's going to work hand in hand with what they call a pour over will. So that's kind of the things where if we wind up creating this trust, we're going to have like anything that's like left outside of the trust, it's going to pour over inside of the trust if we wind up forgetting it or leaving it outside of there, mm-hmm. right? So that we don't have to actually go through probate. So that revocable trust is probably going to be good for most individuals and families. It might take a little bit more time and money to put together, but you do have more control and you do avoid probate. So it's hand in hand with that pour over will. So you wind up having that control. So the trust actually owns your property, right? But you have the control while you're alive. What kind of goals do you have for a living trust, I guess?
Well, I think the main one is kind of what you were speaking about in the very beginning. It's the best vehicle to achieve avoiding probate altogether.
Yeah.
And, you know, some we already kind of talked about some of the pitfalls of probate. One, it's costly. Two, it is public. We've seen historically, you know, some very large cases of, you know, famous actors or musicians who have died, you know, intestate without a will. And, you know, their entire proceeding afterward has been made public. About
I could be wrong, but didn't Prince die without a will?
That's a very famous one.
Yeah.
Indeed. Yeah. And so all of their belongings, you know, what was in their estate becomes public knowledge. And for the heirs of an estate like that, they probably don't want that to be public, because now you're going to be berated with solicitors or, you know, people who are trying to come after your money. So, you know, trusts is having a trust is a great way to protect the privacy as well, you know, which is certainly another goal that having a living trust achieves. And it, I think in general, 99% of people should probably have a trust. Most people are going to need some type of a living trust or trust planning. It tends to be kind of good one size fits all, right? Regardless of kind of your situation, trust is probably going to be a good thing to start with at minimum. Because we've already talked about the pitfalls again of a will. You still certainly go through the probate process, but if those other advantages tend to seem attractive of having the privacy, maintaining control, and avoiding probate, a trust is most likely the best option for most people.
And especially if you have kids and you have any sort of property, right?
Right. Yeah.
Okay.
There's also additional goals with a trust. You know, it could be that, you know, you want to reduce estate taxes.
I think we'll talk about that in a little bit too. I think we're going to wind up getting into that later with the estate avoidance or the estate tax avoidance, which might get a little bit more complicated, right? But yeah, I like totally agree. I mean, like, and then you were talking about before just the minor children kind of thing. And then kind of dovetailing in, if you do have any sort of special needs children or, you know, adult children, as far as just taking care of them and the benefits that they're receiving from the state or the local municipality, you want to make sure that that's set up properly so they don't want to be losing those benefits.
Another one would be if you're looking at a particular, we live in a day now where there's a lot of blended families.
Yeah.
That tends to be much more normal. And that is also a situation where a trust would be very beneficial, especially if you're dealing with second marriages or kids from prior marriages, from a second or from a third marriage, right? And you still maybe have inclination to, you know, leave legacy to them. You know, with community property laws, a will not cut it. It will not be able to, you know, deliver the type of legacy or bequests at the end of life that you might be hoping to achieve. So having a trust is going to allow you those specific bequests and, you know, specific wishes to be seen through.
Yeah. I mean, I've had a couple of situations where, you know, there was the second marriage and it was the kids who wanted to make sure that they were going to receive their inheritance. And it was just kind of a sticky situation because they were just kind of hoping that the second spouse wound up leaving them something and they were just kind of left out because there wasn't the proper estate planning. Another interesting thing would be like family business. So who winds up getting the family business? Maybe there's one child who winds up working inside of the family business. And then, you know, other children are not so much involved, but they want to make sure that the family business goes on and they have to do some sort of estate equalization there. And so that winds up being sticky. And unless you're going to be laying that out specifically to your children, that probably isn't going to be a fun time between those siblings when that event happens. Right?
Estate planning is one of those situations where, you know, because you're dealing normally with a very emotional situation of somebody passing away and you're dealing with money, people get very fishy. And it's just kind of our nature, I think, as humans, you know, those tend to bring up a lot of emotions. And that is why it is always best to have, you know, an estate plan in place that's in writing.
Yeah.
It's legal. It has legal grounds. It's not a he said, she said. And that's, I think, why, you know, this process is so important, especially for those more complex type of family situations or blended families.
Right? And Josh, even in, like, I had the situation like early on in my career, there were two elderly sisters that were living together. The one sister owned the house that they both lived in. And when you wound up taking a look at their trust, the trust owned the house, but the trust actually said that once the sister who owned the house passed away, that the house would actually have to get sold and divided to the rest of the family members. But her sister was continuing to live there. So her sister would have been basically kicked out of the house. She would have gotten her share of the house, but she would have been kicked out of the house. And that was right. Not the sister who owned it. That was not her intentions. So it's some of those things where you have to kind of take into consideration what your particular circumstances are and make sure that the plan fits for what you intend.
Right.
So not to mention the fact that maybe her sister didn't move in until recently. And, you know, it's probably a good thing to go ahead and review those things every so often, right?
Mm-hmm.
How many times have you run into someone who's, you know, I did my trust 15 or 20 years ago when there wasn't the same sort of estate planning laws. I didn't have the amount of kids or grandkids that I want to take care of today. And so things are completely different.
Right.
But I still have the same trust. And my trust is going to abide by what was written in there
mm-hmm.
20 years ago.
Yeah, so we've certainly talked about, I think, why it's more advantageous to consider a trust in your estate plan maybe versus a will. And why don't we open up Pandora's box? I mean, what type of trust? There are many different types of trusts out there, but what type of trust do you think people need?
Well, I would say, I mean, just kind of the basic one that most people wind up putting in place. If they do have, you know, children and property, there might be some different caveats to it, but it's some sort of a revocable living trust. Helps you maintain that privacy, avoids probate. You maintain the control during your lifetime. You maintain the control after your lifetime because you've actually put that stuff into place. But of course, that is for most people who may not have like an estate issue, right? And you had alluded to it before, but when we talk about estate taxes, our estate tax laws today are going to be different than a few years from now. And so that's something that people are kind of taking into consideration because there may be additional trust planning that we wind up having to put in place. So talk to me a little bit about like the current estate tax laws and where those are going in the future.
Well, I guess we'll kind of start it this way. I mean, the majority of people are not going to ever have an estate tax issue in their life. I mean, currently as it stands in 2020, if we just go back a couple of years, 0.1% of people that passed away in 2020 had to pay estate taxes. So, I mean, we're talking about not just the 1%, the 0.1% of people
right.
that may have an estate tax issue. Currently, this applies to people who have a taxable estate that's worth over $12.9 million. You know, you're going to have an estate tax issue. Now, that's per person. So if you're still a married spouse, you know, then that's going to be, you know, close to $24 million.
26, yeah.
You know, depending on your asset size or depending on your estate value. So in 2026, once we have the sunset provision, you know, that is going to revert back to the Obama estate tax exemption. There's also some proposals that are up in the air within Congress. I know President Biden is trying to push the American Families Plan, which has projected and proposed reducing that estate tax exemption down to $6 million. So, you know, then you're looking at potentially a $12 million exemption for an entire family, right? That would certainly probably 3x the amount of families that might be liable for estate tax. But we're still only talking at that point about 0.4% of families that may pass away, right? Or who might experience that type of wealth transfer. So we're talking about a very small percentage of people who this may impact, but we still obviously encounter it. You know, we work with clients that this is, you know, something that is concerning to them. And so, you know, this is an area that we do cover with a lot of clients. And so there are a number of different ways to mitigate estate taxes. And some of that can be done during life. And some of that can be done, you know, kind of in post-mortem as well, right? So Eric, what are kind of some general ways that people can mitigate estate taxes?
So if you are looking at just mitigating some of that and you do have the right estate and planning done, and you do have that, you know, today you have that $12+ million that for the exemption, it'd be nice to go ahead and use that if you have access to it. So if you do pass away now, or if you have passed away recently, you know, it'd be good for you and your estate planning attorney, CPA, to be following this DSUI election, this IRS Form 706. So at the death of the first spouse, just making sure that you elect to take that exemption, to take full advantage of that, right?
Right.
And then second of all, there is different trust planning that you can do. Not necessarily trust planning, but I mean, like lifetime gifts. So if you are fortunate enough to have an estate planning issue or estate tax issue in the future, you can give up to the annual gift exclusion. These days, this year, you can give $17,000 per person. So that always winds up increasing, but it's $17,000 per person per year, right? So you and your spouse could give one particular child $34,000 a year if that was something that you wanted to do. But of course, right. I mean, what I have had some conversations around that with clients too, is just make sure that at some point in time, if you do want to give money to your kids, that you don't necessarily give too much money to them right off the bat, because you may actually need that later on down the road if you do have some sort of health expenses or things that wind up coming up, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's kind of one of those, there's a little bit of give and take on that one.
Right.
Other things, like when you talk about trusts that could, during your lifetime, at least like remove assets from your estate. And so that would include like a spousal limited access trust or an irrevocable life insurance trust. Those are places where the spousal limited access trust, that's a unique trust where, you know, spouses wind up gifting money to each other's trusts, basically. And then the other spouse winds up playing trustee on that. And you still have some access to those same funds, and it's not completely out of reach.
But it still allows you to use that lifetime exemption amount at the current lifetime exemption amount.
Right.
Before the sunset, or before it gets reduced, you know, because of different policy or what have you.
Yeah, it's a unique strategy, which of course has to be done correctly and a lot more detail than what it is that we're going to be talking about here, but it is a unique way to do things. And then the other way to look at that is like irrevocable life insurance trust. People talk about islets. So it's a matter of, you know, if you do have an estate tax issue, that you can gift money to this irrevocable life insurance trust, purchase a life insurance policy inside of this trust. And once you gift that to that trust, any sort of death benefits that come or arise at your death or at like the second death of the spouse, that winds up being completely outside of the estate, so that if there is an estate tax issue, you have money, cash sitting there to go ahead and pay for said estate taxes if that does arise.
And I guess for clients that may not be aware, so why is that a problem? Like if I'm a client and I have $3 billion of life insurance death benefit, why would I want an islet?
Well, let's just say you do have an estate tax issue, right? Or you didn't think you had an estate tax issue and you have $3 million of extra death benefit. Well, that $3 million of death benefit actually adds to your overall taxable estate. So if you had a $13 million estate and you're thinking, well, sure, I might be at $13 million, who cares? But then you don't really factor in that extra $3 million death benefit. Well, now your $13 million estate sneakily just went to $16 million. And now you might have to be paying, you know, your $3 million of extra life insurance is now subject to estate taxes to the tune of 40%.
Right.
So just by having it inside of the estate, it costs you a couple million bucks.
So some simple planning, even with an islet, can certainly help you get those proceeds out of the estate. I think it, as long as it's done within 3 years before death. But that can be a very powerful strategy.
Yeah. And the last one winds up being a charitable remainder trust, right? So it's that's kind of a unique thing. If you do have an idea about giving money to charity, you can use these charitable remainder trusts you basically gift a highly appreciated asset to said trust. And you're able to avoid capital gains when you wind up sending it over there, because you don't have to sell out of said highly appreciated asset. But you also get an immediate tax deduction based on kind of what that final remainder amount winds up being inside of the mm-hmm. trust. So during your lifetime, though, you're able to actually receive income from the trust,
right?
So it's kind of taking a highly appreciated asset that you're maybe afraid of selling because you didn't want to pay the taxes, and you avoid paying the capital gains taxes. You actually get a tax deduction on the way in, and then you're able to receive income from said asset that you're kind of stuck with, and you didn't necessarily want to wait for yourself to pass away to get that step up in basis.
And meanwhile, you get that amount that is contributed into the, in this case, the CRUD or the CRAT, you get that amount out of your taxable estate. So you don't have to pay estate taxes on that.
And whatever that remainder is, that winds up going to the charity or charities of your choice.
How does one create a trust? You know, we've talked about like a lot of the benefits of why you certainly should consider one. In fact, you know, most people should certainly consider a trust, at least a living trust at minimum. How do people go about creating one?
Yeah, well, I guess, I mean, we can even start with just like a simple will, right? I mean, at very minimum, you know, just making sure that you have a simple will in place just says like, here's who winds up getting my stuff. So, you know, at least if there is like a probatable kind of situation, you can minimize that as best as possible. You know, that's kind of like bare bones minimum. And, you know, maybe I think some of the hesitation for people to get stuff going is because they don't necessarily want to pay an attorney to go do that kind of stuff. Right. I usually wind up suggesting, yes, if you can afford it, go ahead and see an attorney, someone that you trust, someone that you can actually talk through things with. But Josh, what is the name of the website that you had found?
So there's one to create a simple will. It's called Five Wishes. And I think they spell it out, F-I-V-E wishes.org or .com. And it allows you for, you know, a fixed price to create a very simple will that will allow you to name an executor, you know, all the basics within a will that can be read, you know, within a probate court that will help that administration of your estate after death.
Sure.
Go smoothly, you know.
Yeah. Another place would be, I mean, whether it be wills or even just doing like a simple trust, like a combination of those things, getting some of your basic documents in place. Trust and will. Neither one of these websites we have any connection to or get anything from. So, by the way, but we've just found those as like different resources, especially even as we've put the information together for today's podcast as well. So it's a good website to at least go to as reference point. Not to mention, if you wanted to have them help you put that together and you didn't want to necessarily pay for seeing an attorney, you know, that's a place where you could go. You know, if you did want to actually see an attorney and talk about your specific situation, you do have the assets, you do have the kids, you want to talk about your specific situation, I think it does make sense to go find an estate planning attorney in your area to go ahead and make that happen. Here in the San Diego area, we do have some people that we have worked with and we do trust and we've talked to with our clients. But in your local area, you know, places that you could actually go see someone, whether it be looking them up online to see references from there, but also just speak to neighbors and friends and people that look like you and see if they have any sort of referrals for you, whether that be from, you know, whether it be an advisor, maybe it's an insurance agent that you deal with, your CPA, you know, professionals that you actually know and trust, and see if you can't get a referral to get that happen.
And I think certainly there's a tremendous amount of value in doing all of this type of trust planning, because, you know, the upside is you're only potentially spending maximum a couple of thousand dollars to get a trust in place. And that honestly, at the end of the day, is going to be much, much more attractive than spending potentially $50,000+ in probate costs or millions of dollars in estate taxes, right? I mean, you're leaving a lot of money on the table by not putting a proper trust or having a proper estate planning done. And Aaron, we've talked about trusts a lot. And while those are kind of the crux of someone's estate plan, what other documents may people need to be updating periodically? And what should they kind of have in as part of their estate plan that we're not talking about?
Number one, kind of an easy thing, but people wind up neglecting this ever so often too, is just reviewing your beneficiaries. So whether it be your insurance documents, your retirement plans, your investments, just making sure that that coordinates with your estate plan, right? So you want to make sure that you're giving the stuff to the right people. So updating that. Maybe you've gotten remarried and you haven't updated your beneficiaries. So I've seen that actually happen a couple of times with people unknowingly leaving money to the wrong person. And that's a sticky and difficult situation. Also, I mean, we've talked about trusts and wills, but there's other things that go along with that if you are putting that full package together. One of them is your advanced healthcare directives. So advanced healthcare directives is really just kind of like a two-part thing. It's just kind of, it outlines the medical care or outlines your medical care if you can't make those decisions. So it comes in kind of in two parts. So one is the living will, and that outlines your preferences on medications or treatment options, procedures that you like or don't like, end of life care, and you know, other things that are involved with that. So that would be the living will portion of things that maybe you want to even talk to your healthcare provider to just make sure that like, these are my wishes and this is what I intend to do. The other part would wind up being your medical power of attorney, in which you're actually giving someone the ability to be, or choosing someone to be your healthcare agent to make decisions if you're unable to. So if you're in a coma or you have dementia or you're in a situation where you can't necessarily take care of yourself, this is someone that you wind up trusting with those types of decisions. The other thing that we would look at is something like a financial power of attorney. So there's your healthcare power of attorney, and then there's you're also your financial power of attorney. So in that same situation, if you can't take care of yourself and make decisions from a healthcare perspective, you probably can't take care of yourself from a financial perspective either. So that financial power of attorney doesn't necessarily have to be the same person as your medical power of attorney. And in fact, many times it probably isn't, because you might have someone that you appreciate for making those healthcare decisions, and then you have someone else who's maybe a little bit more financially savvy that you want to have help you on the financial side of things. The other thing that we'd be looking at is just kind of organizing some of your documents, right? Having it in one place, whether that be in a digital form or something, but you know, organize your insurance policies, financial information, have proof of IDs like marriage certificates and birth certificates, things of that sort, social security numbers, titles and property deeds. Having those readily accessible so that you don't have to necessarily go search for them if someone does wind up passing away. And then the other part that winds up being a little bit more prominent today is the fact that we talk about all of this like physical property and, you know, money sorts of things. But these days there's actually, and it's more popular, it's called this RUFADA. It's actually this Revised Uniform Fiduciary Access to Digital Assets Act. It's a full mouthful.
Yeah.
But they refer to that as RUFADA. And that's basically who has access to your digital accounts and your passwords. So basically, you're naming a digital executor and you're trying to make sure, like, who's going to have access to my Google account? Who's going to have access to my Apple? Who's going to have access to my Facebook? You know, all of those types of things. And I guess that also does carry over to, you know, these days, just difficulties with people with their crypto assets as well.
Absolutely. Yeah. I've seen a few recent articles in some estate planning journals. I mean, digital assets are certainly becoming a more popular asset class, regardless of, I think, what, you know, what people's convictions are. We are starting to see that in more people's outside portfolios and holdings, just like you did with traditional bullion and silver, right? So now it becomes, well, what do you do with that? How do you leave behind a proper paper trail or instructions on how to manage digital currency, you know? And I think to your point, yeah, having that certainly in place is really important. You probably also want to have record of any public or private keys on how to access those things too. You know, public key might be the address to a wallet if you hold, you know, your crypto into a wallet, and then having a private key is more about having how to get access to that wallet. So if you end up passing on and nobody knows that you had a wallet or how to get into it, that crypto is all going to be gone. You won't be able to have access to it anymore, or your heirs won't anyway. So having those types of things written down is certainly going to be also important, and maybe a couple different copies of that. And Aaron, I know you had kind of an idea on that from someone as well.
Yeah, I just recently just working with a client who's got that kind of situation, and their attorney has suggested that, you know, it's one thing if you have these crypto assets and, you know, you and your spouse both know about that, but what happens if you and your spouse aren't there?
Right.
Right. So who are those trusted people that you know are going to, like, and obviously have that documented about the fact that you do have it, here's where it is, and here who has access to these passwords that we trust? Because they were saying that they had suggested in this password, there might be, is a 24 word password, and one person might have access to 12 words and one person might have access to 12 words.
Mm-hmm.
And so then they would have to actually come together and do that in front of somebody to make sure that those assets were taken care of properly. So yeah, it's interesting because it's not as though you have that stuff at a custodian, right? It's not right. Like it's being held at Fidelity or Schwab or, you know, things of that sort. In many cases, it's like that. And I guess, you know, the last thing that we talk about is just having things written down. I mean, it's just even as simple as, like, what would I like to have happen with my funeral? What are my last wishes? Things of that sort. Having that stuff written down. And then, you know, maybe there's like specific heirlooms or artifacts or furniture or rings or jewelry or something like that that I want to give to specific people and I don't want to cause any sort of arguments. Right.
Yeah.
So having that kind of stuff written down. Now,
certainly.
I hope that at least all of the stuff that we talked about, hopefully some of that did wind up resonating to you if you've actually listened to this whole, like, now to the end. But I guess, you know, the crux of it is that if you work really hard to build wealth, build assets, and be able to be in a position where you are going to leave something to someone else, put forth that extra effort to be able to make sure that you've got these types of things taken care of. It buttons things up. And I would say, as far as the anxiety about going through the process of getting this stuff done, clients who we've worked with that have done this and have put it off for a long time have actually said that, you know, once it's done, it's actually a good process and they can breathe a little bit easier.
Right.
So take that into consideration as you kind of look at your situation and see to it that you wind up getting all of these boxes checked for yourself.
Anything else that we're missing? I know we've covered a lot today. And for those of you that are still with us, you know, congratulations. We do hope that, you know, everyone, if you're listening, certainly ensures that you do have a proper estate plan in place. Is there anything else that we're missing, Aaron?
No, I would say that's good for today. But of course, I mean, if there's any sort of topics that you want to talk about and you have questions about your own specific situation, like Josh and I said, we are not attorneys, but we're only educated, you know, to a certain extent. We're not going to be writing any sort of trusts or wills or anything like that for you, but we're just going to go ahead and learn about your situation and direct you in the right path to make sure that's getting taken care of. But if you do have questions about your own situation, please do reach out and ask. So whether it be the estate planning, if it is the investments, if it is the financial planning, you know, you name it, you know, we have access to answers that you might need. So, right. Josh, how do they get a hold of you?
Well, they can reach me at my direct line, which is 858-217-8137. You can also shoot me an email if that's easier. It's josh.nunn@financialsense.com.
You can reach me, of course. Email is aaron.wiegman@financialsense.com. And then my direct phone number here at the office is 858-217-8135.
Well, with that in mind, we're out of time. Until Lifetime Planning returns, we hope you have an excellent week.
Take care.
The Financial Sense News Hour is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell any securities. The investments, investment strategies, and investment philosophies discussed or presented on the News Hour each involve their own unique risk factors, which are not discussed on the show. Responses to listener inquiries are based on the personal opinions of the Financial Sense staff and do not take into account listener suitability, objectives, or risk tolerance. Financial Sense News Hour and its parent company shall not be liable for any financial losses that result from investing in any companies mentioned in Financial Sense or arising out of the use of any material on the News Hour. Please be advised that you invest at your own risk.